You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
It's the first time that Apple have actually decided to tell people about something that they're developing.
High-speed broadband, let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
The three main spamming countries are the United States, China and South Korea.
And I've got some residual powers.
Sounds like something out of Harry Potter.
Senator Coonan, the voice of reason.
There's a couple of systems on a gantry that's actually based on a military missile tracking system.
You put the date on ePray and you get a whole service just on it.
How does it go?
IE7, you were having trouble installing it because you had a genuine copy of Windows that wouldn't validate properly. What did you have to do to get past that?
Built a new machine.
But how hard can it be?
Well, it's not hard at all.
At the end of the day, the photography is all about the person's eye and what they see.
If you find something that's inappropriate about your child, you need to do something about it because it will not go away.
On air, on the internet and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tech Talk Radio. I'm your host, Andrew McComb. This week, Apple's iPhone supporting third-generation mobile communications is heading for our shores. After months of speculation, finally the rumours will be laid to rest. To start with, it's not called the 3G iPhone, it's called the iPhone 3G. So let's take a look at what's in and what's out. To start with, GPS is in. GPS receivers in mobile devices isn't new, as Sony Ericsson included in their current range of phones as well as many other manufacturers. A 3G chipset enabling much faster browsing of the web and downloading was obviously mandatory. The device also has a new sleek appearance with thinner edges and a flush headphone jack. There's more battery life despite the demands of the power-hungry 3G chipset. It's half the price of the previous model. It's available in two colours, black and white. It has a 2-megapixel camera. And it has 8GB or 16GB of storage and a 3.5-inch screen. One feature that is missing is the lack of video calling, a feature telcos love to charge for. The lack of a removable battery is also still very disappointing. And there's no MMS, a feature used to send pictures and movies from one phone to another. That's not to say someone won't write an application to do this, it's just not out of the box, unlike a conventional 3G device. There's no rumoured 32GB of storage, you can't use the device as a wireless modem like you can other third generation devices. There was no mention of connecting the iPhone 3G to Bluetooth devices, such as a keyboard, and no rumoured front camera. So there's still plenty of room for improvement from a 3G functionality point of view. But for those of you with their hearts set on buying the device just because of the brand name, they won't be disappointed. Just watch this space this time next year.
This week on Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra gets into legal talks with Optus over the iPhone. The ACCC slams eBay's PayPal policy. Melbourne Club's broadband bid. Prisons in plan to jam mobiles. And MySpace to get a facelift. First up, though, here's the latest happenings from the Tech Talk News Desk with Dr. Ron.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Apple finally launches the much-anticipated 3G iPhone. Australia's competition watchdog puts the brakes on eBay. Yahoo stocks dive with Microsoft's takeover dead in the water. And Big Brother starts blocking porn, terror and hate websites in France and the United States. Welcome to Tech Talk News. Steve Jobs unveiled the next generation iPhone at Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference in San Francisco last week. As expected, the new iPhone will run on 3G HSDPA telephone networks and will also be fitted with a global positioning system receiver. The new iPhone is expected to go on sale from the 11th of July. Two models have been announced, an 8GB iPhone priced at just $199 and a 16GB model priced at $299. Both models are $200 cheaper than their predecessors. In the United States, both models require users to sign a 2-year contract with telco AT&T. International pricing has not yet been announced. In Australia, Vodafone and Optus have both confirmed that they'll be selling the new iPhone and promised to reveal pricing details well in advance of next month's launch. Vodafone and Optus are the only two Australian carriers listed as partners on the Apple website. Telstra and Three have been notably silent since the iPhone's launch. Instead of releasing constructive information about its iPhone plans, Telstra instead chose to mark the occasion by launching a broadside at rival Optus, accusing Optus of misleading consumers insofar as the new iPhone wasn't compatible with the 900 MHz Optus network. When asked directly by IT Wire if Telstra was planning to sell Apple's new iPhone, a Telstra spokesperson reportedly replied, "Telstra is the market leader in mobiles and we aim to stay that way. So while not commenting on the iPhone or our plans specifically, watch this space." An Optus spokesperson last week said that the iPhone will be available in Australia on prepaid, but that Optus was not releasing any further price details at this time. Vodafone also confirmed that it would be offering the iPhone on prepaid, but similarly would not provide any further pricing details. Australia's consumer watchdog has put the brakes on eBay's plans to implement a PayPal-only payment policy for its online auction site. Chairman of the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, Graham Samuel, last week said he had concerns over the anti-competitive effect of eBay's proposal and issued a statement which called on eBay to delay implementation of its plan. Mr. Samuel said that the ACCC was concerned that the proposal would allow eBay to use its market power to substantially lessen competition in the markets in which PayPal operates. The ACCC has now issued a draft notice proposing to revoke eBay's request for immunity from prosecution. Interested parties can now submit responses to the draft notice before the ACCC issues a final ruling. eBay released a statement saying it would be assessing the ACCC draft notice and would make further comment following the review process. Yahoo's stock price took a battering last week as the instant messaging giant turned to rival search juggernaut Google to handle advertising sales. The share price plunged 10% as investors abandoned hope that Microsoft would ever renew its bid to buy the company. Instead, Yahoo turned to Google to use its superior search technology to display advertisements on Yahoo and Yahoo's partners' websites in the United States and Canada. But shareholder unrest could further disrupt Yahoo's plans, with an outspoken investor, Carl Icahn, vowing to replace the company's board because of the way the Microsoft negotiations were handled. Icahn reportedly still has hopes for a deal with Microsoft. A deal between Yahoo and Google would take some time to come to fruition, with approval still needed from United States anti-competition regulators. And in the fight against cybercrime, ISPs in both France and the United States reached independent agreements last week blocking sites which carry child pornography or material linked to terrorism or racial hatred. In France, Interior Minister Michel Alliot-Marie announced on Tuesday that the plan would become effective in September when a blacklist of banned websites would be distributed to internet service providers. This list would be built from input from internet users who signal sites dealing with offensive material. The announcement coincided with a similar deal in the United States, also announced last week. Verizon, Sprint and Time Warner Cable all agreed with New York State officials to block internet users from accessing child pornography sites from within the United States. Other countries have already introduced similar programs, including Britain, Sweden, Denmark, Norway, Canada and New Zealand. I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
A dog trained to sniff out pirate discs has been found dead.
Sniffer dogs for pirate discs.
I wonder what they smell.
Yeah, how do they know the content
maybe
is pirate?
Maybe printering.
For those of you that haven't caught up, 2:30 a.m. tomorrow morning Eastern Australian time is when the Worldwide Developers Conference is being broadcast.
So there you go. Don't go to any Olympic Games sites with .cn on the end of it.
I saw it. 200 metres, turn right.
A million and one people communicating with us via all method of technology this evening.
She orders pretty much all of her textbooks online from Amazon and gets them here cheaper than buying them local.
Is it a job for government though, or is it a job for ISPs to provide interlinks?
Let's talk about Goosh.
Not everybody that listens to the show is going to get this site.
Vodafone HSDPA also roams onto Vodafone 3G and Vodafone GPRS.
Oh, did I say that?
Yeah, you might have.
Had a bad week last week.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
And a very good evening, very good afternoon, very good morning, wherever you might be listening to us anywhere in the world. Welcome to yet another edition of Tech Talk Radio. In fact, this is number 24 for this year. How about that? We're nearly halfway through the year already. 25 eps, I guess. halfway in a financial year in Australia coming up. And guess what? I haven't heard any news this week because I've been so snowed under with my professional requirements that the guys are going to tell me all about it tonight. But there's one thing that did sneak through that I did actually manage to catch, and that's a new phone being launched or something like that. Dr. Ron, JD, and Graeme, a full contingency here on the panel this evening with all manner of operating software from Windows XP to, I guess, Leopard sitting over there, Ubuntu, and I don't know what else is going on. Evening, gentlemen.
Good evening. Andrew.
Hello.
Anyway, what's been happening, boys? We've got an announcement tonight. We're going to announce our winner of our hard drive competition, but that's after the next break.
The Maxtor competition, looking forward to that.
A terabyte of the best, heading your way if you're lucky enough to, yes.
I put in 100 entries today. I think Graeme put in a few at the last minute as well. So
all disqualified, Dr. Really? Ron, I'm sorry.
Oh, what? Under what name? So we can disqualify.
Yeah, that's right. There was a new phone released, apparently, at the start of the week. JD, yeah. Have you got some, you can shed some light on that announcement?
Well, the 3G iPhone that we talked about last week finally got announced.
Hooray. Woo-hoo.
Was it what you expected, JD? Or was it a little disappointing, or were you a little overjoyed?
It's pretty much what I expected. The keynote was a bit disappointing, I've got to say.
I haven't seen his keynote. Was he up there in his sneakers and his shirt?
He was, yeah. Looking a bit gaunt, actually. He's
really a bit stressed, is he?
Rumours about being unwell with his pancreatic cancer that he had last year. So.
Oh, really? Hmm. Oh, well, all the best, Steve.
Indeed.
Okay, so we'll talk about that little telephone in a sec, but Dr. Ron, you've had some correspondence. Are they being entered into this evening? Lots of feedback. Oh, and by the way, what are we frappering? Are we?
Oh, we're everything. We always are.
After last week's episode,
we always have been. Yeah, we all lost a bit of hair after last week's episode. No, we're listening on the Twitter device again tonight. So if you don't know what the address is to follow them, just quickly listen to last week's. No, I'll tell you what it is. RK5075 is where I'm tweeting at the moment, and that's working.
Now, what's Twitter?
Well, Twitter is a social networking system where you can put your status messages in and it propagates to everybody who's following you. So I've just put in a status message there that says that I'm on the air.
Everywhere.
So if people are following me, they'll see that that's what I'm doing. Mm. And other people can put their status messages in as well. And if I'm following them, I'll see their updates.
And as Adam Turner says, he was feeling a bit old-fashioned the other day. The email address is feedback@techtalkradio.com.au. If you want to contribute in any way, shape or form this evening, let's have Jeff Dudley's there. Good evening, Jeff. Yes, a few of our regular listeners are chirping in already. So what correspondence do say, Dr.
Well, Ron? We have set up a new Tech Talk Radio Facebook group, which we announced a couple of weeks back. We now have 10 members, but I'm sure we can do 10 times that number. So come on, if you're a Facebook user, get on board. You can see if your friends are online and other Tech Talk enthusiasts are online. You can chat in real time now, of course, with Facebook. They've got that little application built in, which is very useful. We've also got some feedback from Jamie G, who's a contributor. Hi, guys. I noticed you talked a bit about the future of internet television. I recommend you look at... Oh, he's steering us towards his blog. I recommend you look at my latest post, especially the post of Philip Hodgetts and I having a discussion. Philip is a well-known digital media guy in the United States. Anyway, point Adam at this too. Adam, you've been pointed. His blog's at www.crafted.com.au/blog and follow the links there through to his discussion with Philip Hodgetts, which was very interesting. So thanks for the link there, James. We also had some feedback from regular contributor Simon. After my rant last week about AANet,
oh yes,
remember they changed the plan on me.
And they slugged you more. Was that
yes,
the case?
Yes, they did. Yeah,
and they didn't tell you. What did they did?
No, they didn't tell me. They reckon nasty. They did. But
I checked mine after you mentioned
how's
that.
How's yours looking?
Oh, I'm still in. I'm a 15 gigger. And I remain unchanged.
Really?
One thing I did notice, though, my ADSL2 has increased in speed. I don't know why.
Ah.
We've gone up 4 megabits. I'm happy about that.
Yeah, they've taken all my bandwidth and transferred it to you. Simon says, AANet did this to me a few months ago, and the download quota was way too high for my needs. I asked them if I could change speeds with a similar discount to the new plan I was given. As a result, presumably to their answer, I've now churned to Exatel. And are very happy with them. They provide web-based SMS for 5 cents, VoIP and mobile services, which I am taking up also. So thanks for that information, Simon.
Texting.
I'm looking around at the moment. I reckon there's like a bit of a price-fixing conspiracy here with the ISPs.
Ooh, ACCC?
Yeah. I had a look around. I had a bit of a chat to Graeme on the phone today about this, looking at plans and what was
for offer. Yeah, I remember you asked me about the plan I was on, yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably the wholesaler that's doing the price-fixing.
I think that's what it is, because everyone's got, like, it's within a few cents or within a few meg Yeah. The plans are all very,
and
very similar.
They'll all be resold packages, wouldn't they?
They are.
That you're looking at. Not, you know, there's organisations like Internode.
Well, some of them will be and some of them won't be, but even the ones that have got their own equipment and are not reselling the main.
Yeah, they should just be a few cents under, I reckon.
Even those guys, they have to buy their bandwidth from somebody, so they're probably the same two or three, you know, other carriers that they're buying their upstream bandwidth from, so.
Well, it used to be a very good point for me.
Damn
where,
monopoly. What were we talking about on the phone this evening on the way here? Someone were talking about monopolies. There's only one accepted, yeah, like the ACCC today, eBay. No, you can't have a monopoly except if you're a telco and you start with T.
Yes, that was, we were having a fun conversation, weren't we? Look, there was a good point for me whereby 14 gig wasn't quite enough for me. I went up to a 24 gig a month plan.
Are you downloading Lost in high definition by chance?
No, well, I couldn't. I could download everything in high definition now if I wanted to. So now I've gone to 40 gig. I don't know what I'm going to do with 40 gig.
Now you can download Lost in high. Adam will be pleased.
Yes, well, good for Adam. He can get on board one of these plans if he likes, but I'm paying too much money now and I'm getting too much bandwidth. I've got Simon's problem there. So stay tuned. I'm trying to churn, but there's nothing that appeals to me out there. There's not much of an alternative.
It's sad, isn't it? Mm. Anyway, we'll see what happens with mobile broadband in the not-too-distant future. I have an email here from Phil Edmonds.
Who
emailed us from the UK recently. I just shot him back a question and said he's been listening for a couple of years now. Just wish he had a little bit more time to contribute a few more emails or posts on the forums. But there you go. We're listening, being heard on the other side of the planet.
Nice. Very nice. Very good.
Anyone else? Any other correspondence, or is that it?
That's all that I've got for this week so far.
Fantastic. Hey, have you been to the supermarkets lately and seen these price card things you get from, say, Safeways and Woolworths?
I try to avoid Safeways and Woolworths.
They've got a new.
I'm a hermit, remember?
I know. They've got a new little system that's come up, which are these little everyday saver cards, and you can go to their website and you log on. But you know how you get the fuel discounts, because we're all Terries these days, because the price of fuel's just, you know, upward of $1.60 a litre these days.
Yep.
Heaven help you if you own a diesel, but nonetheless, you can now go and get one of these little cards from the supermarket, and it saves you having to get these dockets at the end of the day. Where you go and spend $30 or more and you get a little fuel discount. You just wave your little magic card underneath their scanner and it electronically says, yes, congratulations, you get 4 cents a litre off. They claim it's instant on the card. So as soon as you walk out of the supermarket, you can go to your fuel supplier and and redeem your credits, which is really good. And it does the highest ones first and the oldest ones first in that particular order. Having said that, when you register online, they put the big bait of 10 cents a litre off when you first register and sign up. And my question to you boys here is, I know because you like wearing the conspiracy hats and things like that.
Yes.
This sort of card is now going to let them track you personally what you're buying at their supermarkets, is it not? So when you
I hadn't thought of it being used for that, but yes, it could. Yeah.
Because when you register online and get your 10 cents a litre off because everyone goes, yuppie, they now know your name. And there's a few asterisks on the form that you have to fill out. There's a few that aren't. So I suggest if you do want to go down this path, don't fill out any of the ones that you don't have to. But they now know your name. They know your address. So put in your work address and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, how do they verify your name and address? Just put in your bogus.
You could. You need an email account. And then you can log in and remotely check how much fuel discounts you've used and how much fuel you've consumed over the course of the time of your card. Having said that, I'm sure they can see your grocery spend and all those other things. And, you know, you think of the scanners and the technology in the supermarkets.
Their, privacy statement, wouldn't it, to see whether they're actually claiming that they do that or whether they're saying they don't.
Well, what they say and what they do is generally two different things, really, isn't it? Or am I just being, you know, too cynical?
I wouldn't know about that.
But anyway, I just thought I'd talk about that this evening because I thought, well, you know, everyone's collecting information about anything and everyone these days, but yet another bit of plastic in your card and another database that's being collected with your shopping habits on it.
Mm.
Are you going to get one?
No. Okay. I'm going to sell my car and just walk everywhere, I think, ride my push bike.
Yeah, get a company one or something like that.
Yeah, you know, I need to find
someone else to pay the fuel
donate
bills.
Donate me fuel, yeah.
Absolutely. Another thing, too, this week, which I was going to mention briefly on the show tonight, is the old vinyl record collections. People are trying to get rid of them. And there was one. The reason why I'm talking about it, there was one guy that had such a great collection of vinyl records that he had to get his house restumped.
Because of the weight?
Because of the weight of the vinyl.
Huh. I can believe that.
Yeah, can you? Yeah. Because you restore those. You convert LPs or the old vinyl through to...
Well, actually, my dad's the one who was into that. Yeah.
Is it hard?
It's not particularly hard.
Do you need a good record player to do that sort of stuff? Or how does
well,
it work?
Well, obviously, the better the turntable you've got, the better the result is you're going to get. But you don't need anything too special if you've got a turntable from your old hi-fi system, and you probably need the amplifier from your hi-fi system as well, because turntables need a special, what they call a pre-amplifier. And then, feed that into your computer, and the software that you can get off the web to help you clean up and
get
into shape.
What about the pops and crackles that you get, the traditional fridge door opening twang that you get on a record turntable?
Yeah, there are...
The cat's been chasing around.
There is software around that can help you to get rid of that. I use a commercial program to help deal with that problem.
Does it work well?
It works reasonably well, yeah. It does
quite
a good
job. What
does
it do to the sound? Like, does it degrade it around that particular point? Or?
Well, you don't get... it's not 100% perfect. You don't get a complete absence of all the pops and crackles and absolutely no impact on the sound, but it's not too bad. It does its best not to have too great an impact. If you go too hard at it and try to do too much to it, you end up with a bit of a watery sound. It sounds a bit like one of those MP3s that isn't quite so hot if you go at it too hard.
Yep.
But other than that, no, you can get it to sound a lot better than it used to. Yeah.
Okay. Well, there you go. The moral of the story is, if you're buying a new house, make sure the people before you didn't have vinyl records, and your foundations will be good. You won't need to get your house re-stumped. I thought that was rather humorous during the course of the week. The iPhone is here. It's now. Well, actually, July 11, isn't it,
July
JD,
11
as I look through the plethora of microphones
20,
here in the studio?
Yeah, under 20-odd countries, yes.
What about Telstra? They're about the only company that's sitting on the fence still.
What about Telstra?
Why do you say that, Dr. Ron?
Talk about party poopers. Instead of getting all excited and getting on board, and let's stock the iPhone, carry it as well. Let's enter into some sort of constructive negotiations with Apple and see if we can do a good deal as well.
I don't think you can tell Apple to go and stick to their knitting and then expect to get...
Speaking of knitting, we'll put our thoughts on hold for a moment, and we'll go to the view from the couch, because it's very...
It's a very early on view from the couch.
Absolutely, it's very focused about knitting this week.
Knitting.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch on Tech Talk Radio.
The iPhone 3G has been announced with much fanfare, but the silence from Telstra is deafening. Only a few months ago, Australians feared Telstra might have the monopoly on Australian iPhones, and the telco would gouge customers wanting to get a slice of iPhone goodness on Next G. Then Vodafone threw its hat in the ring, closely followed by Optus. Now the second-gen iPhone has been officially announced and will hit Australian shelves on July 11, but still not a word from Telstra. The fact that two phenomenally arrogant companies such as Apple and Telstra couldn't strike a deal shouldn't really come as a surprise. Both like to grandstand, and both are obsessed with owning the customer. It would seem Telstra is paying the price for last year's scathing comments about Apple and the iPhone. Telstra technology boss Greg Wynne called the iPhone old hat and said that there's an old saying, stick to your knitting, and Apple is not a mobile phone manufacturer, that's not their knitting. Now, the fact Australians are rushing to pre-order iPhones with Vodafone and Optus would suggest that Apple might be handier with a 3mm circular needle than Telstra gives it credit for. If Telstra sticks to knitting socks and doesn't offer the iPhone, will Next G customers get cold feet? I think so. Coverage and speed have always been Telstra's justification for Next G's exorbitant pricing structure, but the competition is fast catching up. Vodafone and Optus are rapidly expanding their national HSDPA networks, to the point where Vodafone will almost match Next G's coverage footprint by Christmas. At that point, customers sick of being screwed by Telstra will have little reason to stay, but they need to read the fine print. Vodafone and Optus are running their Metro 3G networks at 2100 MHz, but they're expanding their regional 3G networks at 900 MHz. The new 3G iPhone doesn't support 900 MHz, only 850, 1900 and 2100. So once Optus and Vodafone iPhone users get beyond the cities, they'll fall back to painfully slow GPRS speeds. Hutchinson's 3 network has also been conspicuously quiet on the iPhone front, which is surprising considering Hutchison Telecom in Hong Kong announced it would be selling the iPhone. Considering 3 targets the young, hip demographic, you'd think the iPhone would be a perfect fit. Anyway, back to Telstra. Its insurance policy against iPhone defectors is its Next G 2-year contract lock-in. punters are unlikely to switch networks for the iPhone if it's going to cost them $1,000 to break their contract. You can bet there are plenty of Next G users out there counting the days until they can break free of Telstra. Even if Telstra does offer the iPhone later in the year, it will have a difficult task on its hands convincing users not to defect to Optus or Vodafone, especially city slickers who don't care about slow regional data speeds. Steve Jobs revealed that the 8GB iPhone will sell for $199 US and the 16GB model for $299 US. This is a considerable price drop, but this pricing is available to those who sign up for a 2-year contract with AT&T in the US. Now, Jobs promised global pricing parity, so you won't pay more for the iPhone in other countries, but this might only apply to shoppers who sign up for a 2-year deal with their local telco. Next G users looking to switch to the second generation iPhone might want to buy one outright and slip their existing SIM card into it, but there's still no word yet on outright pricing or whether Jobs' pricing parity pledge applies to outright pricing. If it doesn't, the woeful state of the greenback would make it seem a smart move for Next G users to import 3G iPhones from the US, but Apple has thought of this. Unlike the first iPhones, when you go into a shop now and buy an iPhone, you have to activate the phone on the spot and sign up with AT&T for a 2-year contract. So that means it doesn't make much sense to buy one overseas anymore. Of course, Telstra may have deliberately chosen not to sell the iPhone. Next G users with an iPhone in their pocket are far more likely to buy content from the Australian iTunes store than from Telstra's Big Pond. Considering services like this are where the real money lies, perhaps Telstra has made a strategic decision not to hand customers over to Cupertino. Like I said, both Apple and Telstra are obsessed with owning the customer. There's still a month until the 3G iPhone hits Australian shelves, and anything could happen. Optus and Vodafone are obviously holding their cards close to their chests, so they're not undercut by the other. Analyst group Ovum predicts Vodafone will sell the iPhone for $0 up front, which should bring in the shoppers. If Telstra is going to accept that there is a phone in Apple's knitting bag, it needs to stitch up a deal with Cupertino soon or be left out in the cold.
Entertaining, informative and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
$199 to $200 US, that's not a bad price, and I'd be buying one outright just quietly. I always buy my phones outright now. I've learnt the hard way.
It's pretty good pricing that, you reckon?
Oh, absolutely.
Excellent. Can't wait.
I think there'll be people lining up for them if they sell it outright. Now, we haven't seen any pricing models that I'm aware of yet from anyone, have we? Adam was guessing that we might be seeing $0 for one of the phone companies.
There's lots of rumours out there about around sub $250 on a 2-year plan, but there's nothing official.
But even still, if you look at buying a phone outright, any other phone, a HSDPA, a third-generation mobile, which is a high-speed download, you're going to pay more than that for it if you buy a phone like that outright, yeah, I would have imagined.
Outright, the rumours are around the $700 mark for the 8 gig and around $1,000 for the 16, but again, unconfirmed.
Now, Steve solved his export problems with this new version, did you hear?
No.
Oh, basically, you have to sign up and activate your phone at the time of purchase with AT&T in the United States now.
Ah.
So I'm sure some smart cookie will come out with a workaround for it, but I wonder if they'll do that here. You'll be able to rock into the provider of your choice, buy the device, but you must activate it there and then.
Mm. But what does that do when you activate it there and then?
It means you've signed the contract, I think.
Yeah, but you've signed a contract with them. But
you've locked into a telco for 2 years or whatever the price is, but if you can buy it outright, well, surely.
Yeah, you're not actually locking the device to a particular network, are you?
Well, they are locked. That's what the whole last 18 months of hackers have been doing.
Oh, righto.
Is getting around the lock mechanism.
So if you get one from the US, even if you signed up with a contract and tried to send it over here...
Well, I don't think you'll be able to buy a third generation one from the US because the network's unsupported over there. I could be wrong, and I probably are wrong, but I'm just reading between the lines here.
But still release them because they can still use the Edge networks, so they'd still be flogging them, wouldn't they?
And especially if you're a rural user in Australia. Because what Adam was alluding to is that the high speed or the next G3, which the third generation stuff, which is what Telstra sell, high-speed download packet access, is available nationally on 850 megahertz, which is a band, where you tune in to receive and to transmit from your device to your mobile phone provider. Now, the Apple iPhone doesn't do 900 meg HSDPA.
It does 800 meg
Edge and GPRS.
Does 850.
Yes.
And
yes,
1900 and 2100.
Yes, and hence this is going to be a loophole for unsuspecting communicators, people who want to get one and they live a bit further afield and they have to roam, well, your roaming's going to probably fall back down to a slow speed, unless you're with Telstra. But Telstra, as they say, their knitting needles are still firmly in their bag and we don't know what's quite going on here. But anyway, there's all these downright and dirty things happening at the moment. I think you alluded to it in the news this evening, Dr. Ron, too, that Telstra has served Optus with a notice from its legal department, and Telstra are really good at doing that, and questioning its rival's ability to provide adequate service for the newly released 3G iPhone.
That sounds very official. They served them with a notice. What does that mean? They wrote them a letter and said, "Dear Optus, we don't like Telstra- your advertising campaign. Love Telstra.
We didn't get away with it.
What does Telstra care about Optus's ability to service their customers? Gosh. Isn't that surely something for the consumer to work out?
Well, yeah, you would have thought so. It's just a case of sour grapes.
We got slapped. I'm going to slap somebody else.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. I've got nothing nice to say about anyone or anything, so I'm going to do this instead.
Is this what our country's come to?
Oh, I'm sure it
is. Is this telecommunications at its best, tit for tat, let's keep the prices high, let's have a monopoly, and the poor old consumer's going to cop it?
Pretty much.
The incumbent warned Optus yesterday that some 3G devices will be incompatible with its 900 meg 3G network only, days after Optus revealed that it was going to launch Apple's 3G iPhone next month. Well, this is what we've just been talking about. A Telstra spokesperson said that today consumers should be aware that some of these new phones will not work on the 900 meg frequency. But why would Telstra get legal with Optus over that? Like, surely the ACCC would get legal with Optus because they're protecting the consumer if they're going to advertise something that's not correct.
If they think they're going to lose business because Optus isn't playing fair, then, they can complain about that. But
it's all predicated on the iPhone not doing 900. That's the only real argument here. And so Telstra are assuming the iPhone's going to be a killer. By the sounds of it.
Indeed. And Vodafone and Optus are both rolling out the 2100 megahertz networks. That's going to support 2100 megahertz. So.
It will be a killer, JD. At $200 US, even $300, let's talk Australian dollars here. Let's say $350 to $400 Australian dollars outright, if you can. People are just going to fall over them for them.
Mm.
And at that price, they're disposable, unlike their laptops.
Yes.
But we won't go there. You remember we will go there, actually. Remember that laptop we spoke of probably 2 weeks ago on the show, which was 3 months down the track on an Apple service claim?
Yeah.
Still is.
Did we find out whether it was a reseller or Apple Direct?
No. But what we have found now is that the particular company now wants the restore discs sent to them, which I find amazing. If you'd send your Apple in to be repaired, I'm sure they would have had restore discs.
A couple of spare ones in the back shelf, yeah.
Yeah, you would have thought. But anyway, we won't go there, but that's, yeah.
Other cool features, JD, GPS in this new iPhone?
GPS and also their cellular triangulation, because the complaints that came out early from some of the speculators was that the chipset they've used for GPS, don't ask me which one, I actually don't know, but isn't particularly well known for its in-building coverage. And I guess Apple's way around that is, well, we've got GPS for when you're outside and we've got triangulation when you're inside.
Okay. But GPS to me is always an outside, out-of-doors technology.
Absolutely.
You have to be able to see the sky.
There's 18 or 20-odd satellites floating heavenly above you, many, many miles above the surface of the planet. And anything that gets in between you and them, such as a wet tree, a garage, roof, a building, anything, will prevent the GPS from working.
How often are you inside a building and you don't know where you are?
Well, it's a matter of the phone knowing where you are, so it can tell you where to go and eat lunch.
You've been in a television station recently?
No.
Well, there you go. There's perfect use for it.
Because I haven't developed the telepathy option just yet.
Okay.
But the interesting thing that's been coming out now is that there appears to be some arrangements in the developer kit that you're not allowed to program the phone to give directions based on the GPS, which is a bit weird.
That'll solve Graham's problem.
Yeah. There's no hardware like those fix. Things. But there's a suggestion that Apple, for whatever reason, don't want it to actually be directional. They just want it to tell you where you are.
Hmm. One of the disappointing things to me, because I use MMS technology to send emails of what the kids are doing to mum and all that, and we use it quite regularly on the plan that we're on, the iPhone doesn't support video conferencing. It doesn't support – it doesn't have a camera in it that you can use to do video calls. And the MMS, which is – you know, we all like an MMS these days. You know, what are you doing now? Here I am at the pub.
Snap a quick picture and send it to someone over the phone network.
Yeah, check who I'm going out with tonight, all those things. Mm-hmm. And especially for the young people, which I would have thought this device was targeted at, just doesn't exist at this stage. Mm. I alluded in the opener that potentially a third-party developer would come along and potentially make a bit of software which you can plug in, but it still doesn't cut the mustard that there's no camera in the device.
Well, there's still a suggestion that Griffin or someone like that might come up with a click-on accessory for the extra camera. And there's been rumours for quite a while about a large version of the iPhone, a tablet version, and maybe that would have a camera or just the next generation. So get this one out cheap, get everyone sucked in, and then here's, you know, iPhone Plus, which has got the camera and extra memory and lots of other things.
How important is it to have a battery that you can replace if you go flat? If you're out in the bush, if you're anywhere, for that matter, battery goes flat. Would you like to replace it in your phone?
Apple users don't care. They're accustomed to using the iPod, which just doesn't have any...
That's a gross generalisation, isn't it?
No,
Apple users also use mobile phones, which are non-Apple devices.
Yeah, but anyone who uses an Apple device is accustomed to not being able to replace a battery.
Is that right,
the world
JD?
That they live in.
Oh, that's absolutely true for the iPods. Mm. I mean, obviously, the laptops are a bit different, except for the MacBook Air, which you have to send away, but that's another story.
You have to send it back to the manufacturer if you want to charge the battery.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me tell you, if I go to Sydney for a day, I take a couple of batteries on my mobile, because I flatten a battery by about lunchtime or 1 o'clock, and, you know, it's nice to be able to carry a bit of extra, you know,
The third-party developers for the iPods early on had battery in fact, even for the Newton, if you go back to the 90s, had battery extenders for all these sorts of things. So no doubt there'll be another market for a battery extender for your iPhone.
If you've got your laptop with you, you can charge it via your USB device, and there's plenty of those little USB device-y things out there that you can probably plug into.
Yeah, or FireWire if you're a Mac user, yeah.
They're claiming 5 hours of a battery use. Not bad, not bad.
Five hours talk time.
5 hours on 3G. Which mm-hmm. is pretty good, because 3G chipset's pretty power hungry, and up to 6 hours using Wi-Fi.
Mm.
Even up to 7 hours just using audio playback and video playback. So, or even 24 hours using audio-only playback. That's pretty good in the battery.
Yeah. Steve's demo was kind of interesting. He had all these stats in his keynote, but he also had a video of two iPhones, one running 2G or 2.5G and one running 3G, and comparing the data downloads. And he waited the whole 25 seconds for one of the web pages to load, which was quite amazing.
Apple.com?
Yeah, something like that.
Ooh. Now, what about 2 megapixels for the little still camera that's in it?
Is it 2 meg, is it? That was going to be one of my questions.
2 megapixels. Which is the original specs from the previous model.
The previous model only had 1 point...
No, I think it was 2. It hasn't really changed with the predictions anyway, because most people were looking for 5.
So how do you... You're going to have to email your photos out, because you can't MMS them out.
Yeah.
Good, we're in agreement on that. That's terrific.
See, why can't you MMS them? They just haven't built it into the system.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a bit odd, because it's just the software in the, isn't it, to do it? Again, if they've got a camera there and you can take pictures, why can't you MMS them through the phone network?
Yes.
Just resize them and send them, yeah.
All right, so there we go. A little bit of a chat on Tech Talk Radio about the pending launch of the iPhone. And the good news is that Steve's kept a few things up his sleeve for next year, this time next year. WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference. We'll find out more about what they've done after the break when JD tells us about what's happening with Leopard and all those sort of things, which I'm sure will be very interesting for those people who are Mac-inclined.
The most exciting thing, I reckon, is the price point. I reckon they've
on the phone.
Yeah, they've done extremely well there. It's almost, as Andrew said, alluded to, it's almost like a disposable technology at that price.
Well, it is. Even if your battery goes flat and you desperately need another one, just go and buy one.
Buy one.
Swap your SIM in there and away you go, don't you think?
That's the plan.
All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. When we come back, we're going to announce the winner of our 1 terabyte hard drive, our portable hard drive, wherever you might be in the world. Lyd's going to ship it direct to you from the United States, and we'll find out all about that, after this.
You're listening.
Tech Talk. Any questions? You're all speechless over this.
No, you're listening.
You've got the world's most aggressive spam filter.
Tech Talk.
You're listening.
If you've got the wrong SIM card, it's because they sold you the wrong thing.
Tech Talk Radio.
We may have digressed.
The network's probably ready for fiber to the node now.
Telstra has lost the ACCC court case.
They download loss because they can't stand watching it on commercial television.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. You're listening. Talk Radio.
Welcome back, wherever you might be listening, around the country, around the world, to Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. Sitting in front of me today, three very able gentlemen, all with different brands laptops and all working uniquely differently. And some
uniquely
not,
differently.
And some not so working at all.
Stop looking at my laptop in that tone of voice.
Sorry. Only man who brings in a rubber flexible laptop keyboard.
It is.
It's quite unique, really, isn't it?
It is.
Anyway. Would you like a 1 terabyte hard drive to go with your rubber keyboarded?
I'd love one, but you've told me all my entries are disqualified.
No, that's right. Unfortunately, you can't have one. But now is
Damn
the time.
It.
There's a special time. In the last 4 weeks, we've been advertising. We've been soliciting for your entries into actually coming on board and trying to win one of these things. And tonight is the night that it's time to actually give one away. So
I'm going
to
video this on my dodgy little phone. So
we're going to put it up online. So
we're going to put it up online. High quality video is selected.
Oh, good. So, ladies and gentlemen, as Dr. Ron goes into record on the little
handphone.
You won't
hear from me for 30 seconds.
Here we go. It's time for the Tech Talk Radio 1 terabyte of Mac to hard drive giveaway, as Dr. Ron stands in the corner there. Now, I believe JD is actually going to...
the barrel girl, yeah.
Yeah, the absolutely sensational barrel girl, too, that we have here in the studio tonight. Now, you have a... I was actually going to offer this to Dr. Ron. I was going to offer him the choice of the Smith & Wesson or the choice of the semi-automatic bow and arrow. But since
he's using the Schaefer instead.
You're using the Schaefer instead? All right, well, what I'd suggest to you, we have a dartboard in the middle of the room. We've got all the entries put into one small device, and you're now going to close your eyes and drop something onto that device there and tell us in no uncertain terms who that winner might be. So if you'd like to arm yourself.
Here we go.
Are you ready?
Yeah. One, the device is hovering over the form. Oh, and it's hit.
Oh,
we've got a winner.
We've got a winner, have we? Okay, so now it's back to the drawing board, and the winner is, you give us the map reference on the Tech Talk Radio coordinates.
This one here is the closest one.
Looks pretty good to me.
It's right on the name. All right, so it's Charlie 8.
Charlie 8. That's 1, 2, 3.
See for Charlie, number 8.
And 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 down
That's
there.
A phone number there.
Competition entry. It looks like someone in Darwin. Let's double click it and see who it is. Just bear with us. Now, this is where technology is going to work. It may work, it may not. Anyway, and yes, here we go. The winner of the Tech Talk Radio, 1 terabyte of...
Where'd the drum roll come from?
Did you hear a drum roll in? The winner is Juan Lambert, if that's how you pronounce it correctly. Somewhere from 08. So that could be South Australia.
Is it
could be
Dwayne?
Is that it? Dwayne. Is that how you pronounce it?
Dwayne. Maybe.
Dwayne Lambert. We have your phone number. We have everything there. And he sent a little message down the bottom there to basically to the point that says, I've set myself the task of scanning mine and my family's photos and home videos to hard disk. Having just married, my family has effectively doubled the in-laws. I think it's a great idea to achieve their
memories. I hate when that happens.
Their memories and have a... Yes, obviously. So there you go. He's going to put the photo album on and he's going to need the extra storage space physically and digitally. Can you help? Well, yes, Dwayne. You are the Tech Talk Radio winner of the hard drive.
Yay! So congratulations. Woo.
All right, there we go.
Yeah, oh, that's good. I'm glad it's going to someone who's going to put it to a good use. That's a fantastic use for a terabyte.
All right, Dwayne, we'll give you a ring the next day or so and collect your address details and all that sort of stuff. And Lyd, our US correspondent, our other sexy barrel girl who turned, I'm not going to tell you her age, but she had a birthday last week and she has it over there, and it'll be shipped to you from over there back over here.
That's
very
tremendous. So, thank you, everybody who entered as well and showed an interest.
Now, we have another...
Very exciting.
We have more good news.
Good
news.
Oh, yeah.
I've got another one to give away.
Another one?
Another one.
Another
can
one?
Can we enter this time?
No, you can't. No. I'm sorry. But we're going to announce that next week. So I think this is a 750 gig one. It's the next one down from the big 1 terabyte one. So
we'll do all this again next week.
No, we'll start another competition next week.
Fair enough, then.
And what I'm sort of thinking of is we'll do a deal this time, and whoever wins it can give it a review and come into the studio live, providing they're close to the studio. We don't have any budget for travel in this one, unfortunately, guys. You could ring it in, I guess. So you can still enter from anywhere in the world, but ring it through. We might talk to you on the phone if you're a bit further afield, and you can tell us what you think
about it. Skype or on any of those sorts of things, yeah.
Absolutely. So there you go, our winner. Thank you to everybody who entered. We had lots of entries over there. We had to shrink them down quite amazingly.
They're all fun reading as well. Some were quite comic, some were serious.
We'll publish them up on the hard drive.
On the hard drive.
We will do that. We'll publish them on the WinServer hard drive, and people can have a read of them later on the website. So.
Very good.
So once again, congratulations to Dwayne. All right, moving right along, let's go and talk a little bit more about Macintosh and the WWDC, the Worldwide Developers Conference that Steve got up and did not quite as well as he normally does. What other great things, JD, have we got to look in store for? What's going on with the operating systems things like that? What's the new one, 10.6?
We spoke last week about 10.6, and I was saying, well, I can't
imagine...
Snow Leopard.
Yeah.
There's a name for you, given Leopard's sort of there at the moment. Anyway, we talked about it last week, and I said, well, I can't see it being released now, and I was right, it isn't being released, but they're announcing that in 12 months' time, or thereabouts,
it will be released, which is about
They're letting the cat out of the bag a bit early, aren't they?
Yeah, just a touch. Well, they did it last time with Tiger and Leopard, yeah. Sorry. Boom, boom. So Snow Leopard 10.6, a lot of the buzz around is that the developer's release is for the Intel processor only, but that's largely because it was the first release and the developers will want to get it into their brand new high-end machines. Most people are saying that the later releases for developers will in fact have PPC or PowerPC processor code, probably for the G5s.
They were talking about dropping, was it PowerPC?
Yeah, weren't they? It's a bit early still because the G5 quad cores are still around and pretty useful for graphic designers and high-end designers. So yep. It's unlikely they'll drop them altogether, but they're certainly going to focus on the Intel platform. And most of the discussion was around, you know, 10, OS 10 has been around for a little while now, and it's time to build it from the ground up for Intel.
Was it a hybrid 10.5, was it?
10.4 and 10.5 were both hybrids, yes.
It used to, boot camp and all those sort of things, you'd have to dual boot them. So they're going to change it now so that you don't run those applications?
I don't know that that's the intention, but I think the whilst they ran the OS 10 development in both PowerPC and Intel in the background before they moved across to the Intel platform, so it was there, I think it was optimized for the PowerPC chip, and now they're going to move across and optimize for Intel. Some of the new features that they're talking about, there'll be Exchange support built in, which is kind of interesting.
For Exchange Server, Microsoft. Ooh, talking to the dark side.
Mm. And that's not just for email either. That's for the address book and for
calendar.
All the collaboration products.
And are Apple going to have their own cloud like everybody else?
Well, they do. The Mobile Me was another product release.
Oh, that's right. You talked about that last week.
Yeah. Mobile Me has been released now as a replacement
dot Mac.
Dot Mac.
Yeah. Yep.
And it does a whole heap of things, but one of the things it does do is give you an email push system. So if you've got your iPhone, you can sync your email on the wire. If you run your Macintosh, you can check your email via your Apple Mail program. But if you're a PC user, you can fire up Outlook and connect to it as well. So they're trying to cover
is
all
this
the
through
platforms.
Wi-Fi? Tell us about the woes of Wi-Fi.
Well, MobileMe is actually an internet platform, so it's
yeah, but
much
you have to connect to the internet, obviously via something, whether it's Wi-Fi or in your house or something like that.
Yeah.
Did they not have problems with Wi-Fi with some of their earlier versions, 10.5? Is this going to solve these problems?
10.5's had some problems. I don't think 10.6 is actually meant to be a fix for that per se. I think they're building everything pretty much from the ground up.
Okay, because according to a lot of reports, one of the problems with 10.5.1 or 10.5.x is that wireless Wi-Fi issues have plagued that particular operating system.
Yeah, no more
is that
than
through AirPort? Or you choose another third party vendors type sort of software?
You can use just about anything to run your wireless network with, you know, any platform, Mac included. But you've got to remember they also had issues with the AirPort wireless routers when they first came out. Certainly in the iDisk idea, which was their first foot in the water, so to speak, with network accessible drives. So there's nothing new for Apple to have issues with
you would
with
have
wireless
thought
connect,
the technology, technology would be generic out there at the moment, like, you know, regardless of the operating system, 10.802.11n and all that, which is the new version. But B and G, the old slower versions, which are well and truly entrenched in all the laptops that are sitting here in the studio tonight, you would have thought that technology was fairly robust by now.
Yeah, I don't think that's where the issues were. I might also point out that the latest service pack for Vista breaks some of the wireless routers as well. So there's nothing new about that in any platform.
Oh, no, I'm not having a go. I'm just sort of saying that people, if it ain't broke, don't, you know, fiddle with it. But obviously someone's, yes.
Yeah, if the Wi-Fi subsystems had trouble in 10.5, have they completely rewritten it for 10.6 is the big question, I suppose.
I think they're fixing it for 10.5 now. There's a release due out shortly. A
couple of little patch, 10.5, 2s and 3s and stuff.
So you think the answer is patching rather than rewriting.
Some of the other things that are going to be in 10.6 is OpenCL. No one can quite tell us what CL means yet.
I was about to say, what's OpenCL? But you just answered that
question. Do we know what it does?
It's the replacement for the Xcode developer kit. So it's the new language for writing Microsoft Apple applications. It's going to be based on C. Yeah, that was a Freudian slip. It's going to be based on C, and so some people think it's open C language or it's open core language or open core library. There's a whole lot of different names floating around for it. A new version of QuickTime X or 10, which depending on which way you want to go. Not that they've released
skipped from 7 to 10 now, have they?
Yeah, something like that. So there's going to be another 3 releases in the next 12 months, it would appear.
Can I download it without having to reinstall iTunes?
Probably not.
No. All right, go on.
And Grand Central
It'll install itself without you knowing it anyway.
Oh, good. That's it.
And Grand Central is the code name to talk about improved multi-core support. So, you know, with the quad cores and 8 cores and so forth coming out, they're trying to
improve. You've got to keep up with all these processes these days, don't you?
Yeah. So that's 10.6, not due out for another year, 18 months, but the developers have got a chance to play with it now.
So WWDC 2009 is going to be a real hoot. Everything that you didn't get this year, you'll get next year.
Yeah,
that's shaping up.
Every year, though, isn't it?
Yes.
It's a bit like an election campaign, isn't it?
iPhone 4G.
Who knows?
Oh, don't start rumours, Dr. Ron. We've only just got over the 3G rumours.
If you want to speculate, let's go out on the rumour mills.
Yeah, let's go on the limb.
There's certainly been some discussion about a tablet Mac for a very long time, and I think that's probably all the graphic artists deciding they really want one and trying to force Apple into a corner. But there have been a lot of discussions about either a very large iPhone or a tablet version of the MacBook.
But the whole tablet sort of form factor, that sort of came and went with PCs, didn't it?
There's a patent floating around from Apple that's still out there from a little while ago now that talks about slotting your tablet PC into your stand and turning it into an iMac with a keyboard.
Oh, I don't like slotting things in.
Apple have dallied with this before with the PowerBook Duos, which is a sub-notebook that didn't have any external optical drives and so forth, and you slotted it into a machine that looked like a video cassette recorder, which had your screen on top and your keyboard connected and an external hard drive and so forth. So they've done this sort of thing before, and I guess now that they can potentially put a large touch screen in their tablet, sliding it into a frame to turn it into your actual screen is actually quite attractive for them.
Yeah, there is something to be said for that type of system where you have a notebook to carry around, plus you dock it, and you've got your full big screen and your proper keyboard and stuff on your desk. Mm. So I do know people who work that way with their PC notebooks. So
that could come in the future. The other little rumours were prior to WWDC was about the Mac Fusion, which was probably a bit of a hoax. But nevertheless, the rumours are persisting that there's going to be an even smaller Mac Mini, either called a Mac Nano or something else, that will be a smaller form factor, again, about the size of an Apple TV, but with an optical drive and hard drive and all the rest of it in there. So there's some discussions that there'll be a new Mac Mini because it's overdue for an update.
Okay. Look forward to all those sort of things, you Mac people out there. I'm going to get myself an iPhone. I think the price is right. I think they've really... You know, if they can manufacture millions of these damn things at cost, then why shouldn't everybody have one?
They've set themselves a good target. Do you know off the top of your head, JD, that it's X million that they were going to try and sell by the end of the year?
I don't have a head for that. I think it's one iPhone in every home, isn't it?
Too much. They released
one. Is that all?
Yeah, in Australia, maybe 3.
They didn't have an official target, though. There was a target figure I saw. It was something like 10 million or 20 million or 40 million by the end of the year. So
I do like the new look. Have you seen it? It's all curved. They've got rid of some of the square edges on it, made it a bit more...
It's a bit more streamlined.
You know. And you can get it in white.
Yes. Mm. Why didn't they do a pink version and a green version to
match
their iPods?
Will. Don't mention it too loud. They probably will.
They'll have special editions that we'll see.
All right. Let's talk about something else, which is very, very much in the news today. This is the ACCC having a go at eBay. Their policy over PayPal to basically say that if you now shop on eBay, it's supposed to kick in tomorrow. Now, tomorrow's date is, as he looks at his laptop, what's today's date?
The 16th.
So 17th tomorrow was when this new regime was going to be rolled out by eBay, and that is that you can only do a transaction more or less using PayPal. Now, the ACCC, which is the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, came out today and said, we think this is a monopolistic type sort of attitude that you're, you know, enforcing people to buy this way, and we don't think it's right. And so far, so that they've actually said they've slapped or whatever they slap on them to say that if you do this, you're in big trouble.
They issued a draft notice. And
is that what they call it, a draft
notice?
Yes,
and then
but it's only a draft. You don't have to listen to drafts.
Well, it's a notice saying that this is what they intend to do, and they're prepared to listen to people's responses if they have a very, very good argument as to why they shouldn't go ahead with this. And if they go ahead, the ACCC goes ahead, then it'll become law.
Now, this draft notice came out late last week.
That's right.
And over the weekend when I logged into eBay, I was required to read a message that says, as of the 17th, you have to have
a paper. I saw that.
Yeah. first thing you did when you logged in over the weekend.
Wonder what we're going to be talking about this time next week. It's I don't know. It's anti-competitive, if you ask me. If you're forcing one, like I can see the logistics behind it. Yes, it's good. It can makes things a bit more streamlined from a transacting point of view. But what if you wanted to do it another way, like COD and things like that, where you would normally rock up and give someone some cash?
Well, you can do that. That's still allowed under these.
Oh, COD's still a goer, is it?
Yeah, it was even in the splash screen that came up on the weekend.
Ah, you've read your splash screen.
I did read it.
But do you think it's anti-competitiveness or what? I don't know. I personally would like to use PayPal because they don't sting your merchant fees from like the banks do.
Yeah, I agree. But I like to use PayPal, but I don't like being forced to do anything. So yeah,
well, we know that.
Sometimes it's easier to punch in a credit card number and to...
Well, you can do that in PayPal as well. PayPal's great like that.
Yeah, but they're taking a cut, though. They're saying, oh, because you're using our system that we're imposing upon you, then we're going to charge you to use it as well.
Hello, merchants do that already. The banks do that. They take more than PayPal do.
Yeah, but it needs to be my choice. If I want to either give the American Express people or the MasterCard people my money, or do I want to give eBay my money as well as giving them my money? Money from them being selling the
product. You want to spread the goodness around.
Well, yeah, I might want to spread the goodness around. I might not want a PayPal account. I might just want to stick to my Visa or whatever.
Anyway, as you would expect, eBay has challenged the ACCC's proposal to oppose the auction site's PayPal policy only, claiming that the ACCC's proposal undermines online consumer protection. eBay has announced that it will delay the removal of other payment methods from the site until the 15th of July.
So you go. Got another month.
Them's fighting words, is it not?
So you're still going to have a PayPal account, because that's what the splash screen notice said. You'd need to have a PayPal account, but they won't remove the other options until July. Is that right?
I think that's right. So if you're a new person signing up to eBay,
you have to get a PayPal account as part
of
the process.
Yeah, as part of the registration process. I think that's what they're doing.
Excellent. Now that we've solved that problem, tune in next week for the final conclusion.
Do you really think we've solved the problem? I think we've contributed to it, if nothing else.
Well, you did not bad. A next 4G iPhone. Well, good. Yeah, the rumors have started here right now on Tech Talk Radio. And we're going to take a break and we'll start some more after this.
Compelling.
Every once in a while, a revolutionary product comes along that changes everything.
Judicious.
The question is really whether young people particularly are addicted to being connected to other people all the time.
Historical.
Today is a very important day in Australia's history. This is the day, the 6th of October, 2006, that life in Australia will be changed forever.
Caring.
I know as a parent, I would often say to my children, you've just spoken to this person for 8 hours at school. How can you sit online and chat to them for another 5 hours?
You heard of road rage? What about web rage?
They should be wearing a mask and carrying a gun.
Relations between Telstra and the federal government have been extremely strained almost from the moment Sol Trujillo became chief executive.
Optus had quite a good quarter, but its 3G service is very low profile at the moment.
And the Queen's got an iPod.
Betty's got one.
Yeah.
Wonder what she listens to. She'll probably listen to us.
An unexpectedly high number of voters swamped the system. Well, what did they expect?
Controversial.
Less attention is paid to the equally interesting question, should journalists blog?
Magical.
And I've got some residual powers.
Ambitious.
High-speed broadband, it's available in most of Asia as well as being in the rest of the world. Let's just make sure that we can get it in Australia this year, not next.
Religion.
Talking for the Roman Catholics, I have been on Vatican Radio.
Comedy.
You put the date on E-Pray, and you get a whole service. Just on how does it go? It goes...
Insightful, entertaining, and informative. Tech Talk Radio. More than just technology.
It's a strictly rehearsed and finely polished program.
The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Welcome back to Tech Talk Radio. Yeah, Andrew McComb here, Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan, JD. We're all here. We're going to talk about Telstra considering reselling ADSL 2 Plus to its ISP rivals.
Oh, good
nice
on them.
What do you reckon? Is that a nice thing to do? Telstra has done an about-face on its broadband wholesale strategy by suggesting it might be willing to resell ADSL 2 Plus high-speed internet services to rival ISPs. You guys were mentioning earlier on in the show about the fact that you reckon there's some form of collusion going on there at the moment with only a few cents difference.
Well, the pricing and the plans are all very, very similar across all the other, the smaller ISPs at the moment.
Yes. Well, Telstra, which had delayed its switching on of more than 900 exchanges for 3 years, and 3 years until April this year, has traditionally denied competing ISPs access to its ADSL 2 Plus network in the fear that the ACCC would force it to resell the connection to its competitors at lowball prices. At the time of Telstra's opening of the ADSL 2 ports, that's the other 900 that they opened up the other day, the company declined to state whether or not it would offer wholesale access to its freshly unveiled high-speed services. Now, they're everywhere. You can actually get ADSL 2 Plus via Telstra nearly absolutely everywhere in any exchange that even doesn't have competitors' equipment in there at the moment, which I thought is quite good. But then you go and read the Big Pond pricing and you go, ooh. You know, you just end up paying $20 a month more than you would with any other ISP. So you just got to ask yourself, is that extra 5-6 megabits in download speed worth it over an uncapped ADSL 1 at around about 8 megabits per second? And to which the answer is, Dr. Ron, would you spend that money or would you stay at 8 megabit ADSL? I guess it depends what you're doing with it, really, doesn't
it? I'm rather envious of Graham at the moment because he's paying about $20 or $30 a month less for ADSL 2 Plus and he gets more bandwidth than I'm paying for. So
yes,
it's crazy at the moment. There's not a lot of parity between the pricing of ADSL first generation and ADSL 2 Plus.
It is funny, isn't it? ADSL 2 is traditionally a little cheaper than ADSL 1.
Yeah, it's all over the shop.
And I think that's because of competition. It's because of companies like Internode that put their own devices, their DSLAMs, into telephone exchanges.
Yep, and because those companies are not as reliant on reselling Telstra services where they keep the prices high.
And then as a result, Telstra has to resell to compete, or else they miss out on a bit of their market share. But I think Telstra will always have some market share. Anyway, interesting news for Telstra there. Prisons in a plan to jam mobiles. Now, we've spoken about this before, but it's raised its head again in the mainstream media. Australian prisons are planning to block the use of mobile phones by inmates after the federal government agreed to help remove a legislative ban on jamming devices. Heaven help anyone who lives near a prison or a detention centre and wants to use a mobile telephone.
Or if you go there to do other work or whatever.
Because a jamming device is a transmitter, which would be sitting somewhere in close proximity to where those people would be wanting to use a mobile phone and just generating nasty stuff on radio frequencies right across the whole spectrum.
And they'll be causing harmful interference to people who are nearby the prison.
Yep.
Could be, yes. There's potential here for there to be problems.
Presumably the antennas are very directional. I'm hoping that the way these devices are designed or the way that the installation of them and the operation of them is regulated will be that...
I wonder if it's
very, very tightly controlled.
How the outside pointing in rather than on the inside pointing out.
Yeah.
I wonder if the telcos are going to become involved in this by maybe a bit of engineering design, whether they make sure that antennas are not quite pointing towards prisons or up the wrong street or something like that. But I guess that's a bit too hard in metropolitan cities around Australia. But surely in rural areas that wouldn't be too hard to achieve, would it?
Well, of course, it'd be easier in rural areas because there's not going to be people as close. But and I do work for a customer that's within shouting distance of the remand prison in the middle of Melbourne.
Oh, yes,
in West Melbourne there.
Yeah, but I'm surprised that actually any radio wave penetrates that sort of environment. Have you seen the Faraday shields that they have around all the windows?
Yeah, they're called bars.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yeah. You know, it's so much like a jail since they put bars on the window.
It's not unlike your microwave oven where you have a Faraday shield in that, which blocks radio frequency inside the device.
But I'll tell you what, I'll be very annoyed if my phone shows full signal and I can't make a call or if suddenly I can't get a signal from my customer that's right near there.
Yes, it would be very unnerving. But I wonder what the ACMA are going to have to say about it. But apparently, because they upset the New South Wales state government's plans not so long back to try this technology out. They said, no, you can't do that. You're going to interfere with services.
Radio communications law is a federal matter, yeah.
And then you've also got to look at the fact that how much of an emergency service is a mobile phone device. Like if someone maliciously turned off your phone at your house... Then, what happens if you need to call a service or something like that? If there's a matter of life and death, what happens then? Maybe they can shut them down. I don't know. It's food for thought, don't you think?
They'll have to implement it carefully.
All right. China denies US net attacks. As we discussed on Tech Talk Radio last week, China is one of those, and Hong Kong and those sort of places, .cn, .hk. Just be wary, 11% or thereabouts of websites over in those domains harbour malicious code. And this week, China has denied accusations by two US lawmakers that it hacked into Congress computers, you know, the US Congress.
Right, right.
Saying it wasn't capable of a sophisticated cybercrime. Well, there you go.
China's saying that it isn't capable of...
No. You work that out. I just thought that's good odd spotty type sort of material.
It is, but, almost, you know.
And of course, the Foreign Ministry of China, Mr. Qin, Q-U-I-N, I think it is, Qin Gang, it looks like Yin Gang, said, came out in a statement and said, is there any evidence? Do we have such advanced technology? Asking all these questions. Even I don't believe it. There you go. So, but then again, that's, you know, one of those countries.
We've got a Hong Kong-based odd spot, so that'll it'll tail in quite well, that
fantastic
story.
Fantastic.
I've got another crime story here as well. Yeah, ACT police have announced a new way for Canberrans to report crime in their community. The ACT Region Crime Stoppers, in partnership with ACT Police and other community sponsors, will be adding an online capability to report crime via the new ACT Crime Stoppers website. Thought that was exciting.
So you can,
if you wake up in the morning and find someone's kicked over your letterbox, you can go to the website and report it there.
Okay, kicked over your letterbox. I said, hang on, dear, there's someone in the house, quick.
This is where you'd need to make a bit of an educated guess. Do I wait until the morning and hop on the internet, or do I pick up my phone and ring 000 now?
I live near a prison, they've escaped, and I've got no mobile broadband access. Yeah, damn.
Potentially, police will upload forensic face fits of suspects, photographs of missing persons and other information relating to unsolved cases, as well as providing information on the school's youth crime awareness and community crime awareness programs.
Fantastic. Now, what happens when Google indexes this?
It'll be good. It'll mean all that stuff's out in the
forever
ether,
and a
forever.
Day. Yeah. Absolutely. So little Johnny, who's had a slap across the wrist, is going to be known for that slap across the wrist for the rest of his natural life, or until such time as Google falls off the planet, which I can't see that happening in the short term.
Interesting. So there you go. ACT's, step forward there with their well online done, crime reporting.
Well done, Canberrans. Now, something near and dear to you, Dr. Ron, MySpace. You're a MySpace user.
No, I am not.
Okay, good.
No, bite your tongue.
Not near and dear to you.
No.
Sorry, I lose track of all the social networking sites that you like to frequent.
No, MySpace, I'm not a fan.
Have you been Twittered tonight?
No, I haven't been Twittered. Twitter's been quiet.
Oh, good.
People might be following me. I've put a couple of updates in there.
Have you?
Yes.
Well, MySpace is to get a facelift of all things. The online hangout MySpace is revamping its site to draw more members. Do they need more?
Faceliftspace.com.
I thought they had millions of members. Anyway, they need more members, and the facelift will also help them better engage with one another. Search capabilities are being improved. For instance, the results with other users, music videos, and general types of applications, MySpace site, and the web at large will be sorted into separate tables. That's good. I must admit, I'm not a MySpace user. I don't know whether that's good, bad, or indifferent, but... who knows?
MySpace has been around a lot longer than Facebook.
Yeah, Microsoft nearly bought it.
Yeah, nearly. Nearly.
Yes. And they've missed out on Yahoo too, which they, I think it was valued around about, I don't know, however many billion dollars.
I don't think they're too worried about missing out on Yahoo. I think Yahoo's more worried about missing out on
Google
by Microsoft.
Microsoft.
Yes. Reading between the lines.
Yeah. Now, another pet subject near and dear to our hearts, banks are under fire over fees. Consumer groups say banks are gouging on penalty fees and have called for the watchdog to protect consumers against unwarranted and exorbitant charges. A Senate inquiry into the Family First Draft's fair bank and credit card fees has been told that the bank sees up to 92 times the cost of processing failed direct debits and up to 16 times the cost of processing dishonoured checks, which is all a computer entry. Not bad money if you can get it, I wouldn't have thought.
It's pretty good.
You know, the banks need to overhaul their technical systems, like clearing a check these days. Well, when was the last time you went and put a check in the bank? I can't even remember. Even QuickBooks, they said, here, have 50 free checks. I said, thank you very much.
I'm going to do with them, but thanks very much. Yeah. The other thing that always gets my goat is that if you do get a check from the Reserve Bank, you might get a tax refund. They say, oh, yeah, it's going to take...
Really? You,
know,
you get
take...
them? No, they don't send checks.
No, they can do it electronically now, yeah. But if you do get nominate to have a check sent to you, they say, oh, yeah, it'll take 10 days to clear, 10 working days or 2 weeks.
Yeah, we don't trust them.
No, like check for
$100. I've had this argument with my bank in the past. How can a check from the Reserve Bank of Australia need time to clear?
Exactly. It'll have a different signature on it now. Like, they might trust him more than the other player.
Oh, break. What are they doing?
Speaking of breaks, we'll be back shortly.
Listening to Tech Talk
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
Microsoft are going after career pirates, would you believe? Microsoft has filed 21 lawsuits in the US federal courts as part of an effort to stop those who continually pirate its software. These 21 US lawsuits in the federal courts are part of the effort because they're just sick and tired of people knocking off their software.
Have they only found 21 Korean people that are pirating their software?
Korea.
They had their own little boats.
I wonder if
they've
been to the Caribbean markets here in Melbourne. That'd be very interesting to see, wouldn't it? Have you...
I have been to Caribbean Market, but not for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Fair enough, because that was, I think, fairly... Not so much Microsoft products, but other sort of dilemmas throughout the course of time. Other sort of piracy issues down there. The feds have spent a bit of time down there, too. But anyway, Microsoft having a bit of a go. I don't think they're after the little fish. They're after the big guys.
Right.
Yeah, it's the way to go.
And were they successful?
I don't know. They've just got some lawsuits happening. We'll wait and see. It's like all good legal systems. They're running on Microsoft computers. Could take a while.
Yes.
Anyway. Also, Microsoft and June security fixes. How did any... Well, you guys are all pretty Linux-based type sort of people.
But no, I got my updates.
Did you?
Yeah. Yep. All went on okay.
Oh, good. You're the one.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Well, lots all of three of
my
trouble,
all three of my servers decided to think twice before restarting.
Oh.
I got to... two of the three were sitting there saying, we're waiting for a restart and shutting down. And the only reason I discovered that, because I had to wake them up to go, why can't I connect to you remotely through terminal services? Anyway, so the patch Tuesday got to it, which was good. But everything else went okay. The clients just booted up beautifully again. So if you've got a little yellow triangle down the bottom of your taskbar saying there are updates ready to install, go ahead and install them and hope for the best. But anyway, Microsoft issued 7 security bulletins covering 10 vulnerabilities, including components of Windows and Internet Explorer. And I reckon the Internet Explorer thing was what got me the other day. I don't use it, but it becomes fairly integral part of the operating system.
Well, it's a fundamental part of the computer, isn't it?
It is.
So, yeah, you've got it there and it's working for you and it's working in the background whether you like it or not.
Yes. Yes.
Even if you're not actually running Internet Explorer.
Yeah. do you use IE? Which browser do you use these days?
Firefox.
Of course. And speaking of Firefox...
Firefox version 3. I've actually got version 3 running in front of me as we speak.
Have you?
The new version of Ubuntu, which is 8.04, ships with Firefox 3 beta. But they're trying to get a new Guinness World Record set.
What, for beta releases?
For downloading the most number of downloads of a piece of software in one day. No, not for the number of beta releases.
Oh, they want you to download it on the same day, not just use it on the same day.
Exactly. Oh, so they want you to download it. They want people to download it and start using
it. I already have. So do I not count?
No, you need to download it again, I think.
I had a bash of beta 2, I think, of Firefox, and I got off that fairly quickly. It was one of those really hard sort of, why is this doing this so, and all that sort of stuff.
What sort of trouble did you have?
I can't remember now, but it just locked up on a few things. I think it didn't like my Kaspersky antivirus and didn't let anything come through, so I couldn't browse a web, which is a pretty fundamental requirement of a web browser,
Yes. The website is spreadfirefox.com.
Oh, yeah, that's been around for a while, though, hasn't it?
Now, their mission is to set a Guinness World Record for the most software downloaded in 24 hours. The target, 1 million downloads of the Firefox preview release in the next 10 days.
Oh.
So there you go. Now's your chance to contribute to attempting to set a world record. And Mozilla believes there is nothing that a large community of enthusiastic volunteers can't accomplish. This site exists to unite community into one cohesive marketing. Oh, yeah, it's all getting a bit...
I would have thought Microsoft or Apple would have held those Guinness Book of Records for the number of downloads fixing some of the vulnerabilities or patches
in their
software.
When they release their patches.
Yeah.
Well, they want 1
More
million.
More so than what that Firefox would have.
1 million in 10 days is their target. Spreadfirefox.com. There you go.
Okay. Now, speaking of Kaspersky...
Yes, we were.
Kaspersky sends an SOS to crack 1024-bit encryption key. Have you heard about this?
No.
For those of you who aren't familiar with Kaspersky, Eugene runs a company in downtown Moscow, pretty popular antivirus, anti-everything company to protect your online experience. Anyway, his current request is he's calling for security and cryptographer experts to join forces in an effort to crack a blackmail virus that employs a current unbreakable 1024-bit encryption.
The virus has got an unbreakable encryption.
Well, if Eugene can't crack it, that's pretty tricky, I would have thought. But an encryption of 1024, because we only ever used to have 512 was maximum, wasn't it? Well, they thought that was pretty good.
Yeah.
And then it's gone up even further to the next level of encryption. So there's some smart cookies out there using their skills for evil rather than good.
So is there a hiring now link on the Kaspersky webpage?
I guess so. But the malware is a revision of a previous virus thought to be from the same author, which appeared 2 years ago but only used 660-bit key. Well, he's got a few extra keys and he's locked in his door now. A few more tumblers there.
Does it say what it does?
No, so far Kaspersky and other security vendors have been successful in cracking the 660-bit key, but efforts to decode the 1024-bit have proven unsuccessful. Kaspersky has estimated that it would take around 15 million modern computers running for about a year to crack the 1024-bit encryption.
It's
a lot of computers.
It is.
In light of this, Kaspersky has launched a global initiative called Stop GP Code and put out an international call for all cryptographers, government research bodies and other antivirus vendors to pitch in to crack the code. So a bit of a group effort there on behalf of Eugene's sort of thing too. And another bit of interesting trivia that came across my desktop this evening, which I'll share with you now, boys, is Sharp, the manufacturer of televisions and the likes, is about to ship the world's largest LCD display. Guess how big it is for those of you who want the biggest in your living room?
Is it bigger than mine?
Mine's, that's a very personal question, Dr. Ron. How big's yours?
Well, we don't have a webcam. Mine's 37 inches.
What is?
It's not Sharp. It's my LCD display.
37 inches?
Yeah.
Okay.
My LG 37-inch display.
I hate to tell you this, but yes, it is bigger.
Damn it.
By a factor of how many?
at least four.
Oh, okay. So it's...
The 108-inch display, priced roughly at 11 million yen, which is 108,000 Australian dollars for those of you doing the maths.
Wow.
Would be made to order and sold mainly to businesses.
LCD 108-inch.
108-inch LCD set for just a mere 100 grand.
That's big.
It is big. And when you think of the resolution of television, you wouldn't want to stand too close to it. It'd look terrible.
No, but it'd be really cool if you had a wireless mouse and keyboard and you sat back on a couch, like a little bit back from it.
Now, you need your neighbours to buy one of these because you were saying last week that you watch their television from across the road. Is that
I think I could watch it from down the street at the tram stop if I wanted to if they got a 108-inch LCD in their living room. My goodness, awesome.
Imagine hanging it on the wall and you know, the bracket breaks off and the plaster comes out and stuff.
Would that happen? The whole house falls down.
The whole house would fall down. You have that problem now with 30 and 40-inch displays with a 100-inch one. Wall would collapse. It would. It's terrible.
Oh, goodness me. All right. We're going to take a break when we come back. The odd spot gadget and all that sort of stuff as we actually probably be the break after this. We'll do all of that sort of stuff, but we'll be back with more in just a moment.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Have you heard something on Tech Talk Radio worth talking about? Are you looking to share your technical dilemmas or opinions with like-minded Tech Talk Radio listeners? Well, now you can. Introducing the Tech Talk Radio web forum. Visit forum.techtalkradio.com.au and join our community. It's free and on a web browser near you. The panel on Tech Talk Radio.
The Space Shuttle Discovery and its crew of seven astronauts returned to Earth Saturday night, Australia time.
What did they do up there this time?
They did all sorts of good stuff. It was a successful mission.
That's good.
They achieved everything they set out to achieve, and they even unblocked the toilet, which was good.
Well, they sent a plumber up, didn't they?
They sent a special plumber up to replace the toilet system. The shuttle descended through a few puffy clouds and landed under the control of Commander Mark Kelly. 2 hours later, all the astronauts... including Garrett Reisman, looking remarkably fresh and fit after 95 days in space, walked out, shook hands with NASA's senior managers, and admired the ship that safely brought them home.
That must be an interesting experience, gravity coming back after you've been in space for that long.
I was thinking that, especially if you think about the jolts and thuds and everything they would experience when they were actually hitting the ground again and landing. It's bad enough when you're in a normal commercial airplane.
Have you ever been weightless?
No.
It's a very interesting experience.
There's one time I was really drunk when really? Yes, tell me about your experience.
It's a very uneasy experience. I was in an aircraft and we were doing some interesting acrobatical maneuvers over a certain mountain range just a little bit north of Victoria's ski fields.
All right.
And the pilot said, "Have you ever been weightless?" And he says, "Yeah, feel this." And I'm going, "Oh." And it is. Your stomach comes right up into your sort of mouth. Not that I was crook or anything, but, oh, it's a very interesting sensation.
Yes. Well, this man was, weightless for 95 days.
Wow.
It's a long time.
And now, goodness me, long time.
Just looking at my notes here, there was some damage done to the launch pad when the space shuttle took off on
what
the
happened?
31st of May.
Oh, yeah.
That makes a nice change.
Well, yeah, at least
damage the shuttle.
Absolutely.
Yes, over 5,000 bricks flew off the flame trench when Discovery blasted away, most likely because they were not attached properly to the underlying concrete wall when the pad was built in the 1960s for the Apollo moonshot.
They've hung in there pretty good, I would have thought.
They have.
Think about the forces that must go through that trench. This is the trench directly underneath where the rocket exhaust gets diverted sideways underneath the launch vehicle.
That's right, so and away from the from the shuttle.
Because otherwise it would hit ground and come straight back up again and
that wouldn't be good,
the machine.
Would it?
No, that would be really bad.
Very bad. NASA managers...
Need another seven astronauts again, wouldn't
we? Yes. NASA managers are confident the launch pad can be fixed in time for the next shuttle flight in October, which will be by Atlantis to the Hubble Space Telescope.
Well, what are they doing? More renovations on that?
Yeah, well, it's nearly finished. They're going to the Hubble Telescope in October, but no, the International Space Station's nearly finished. It's three-quarters complete.
Wow.
Which is good.
Very good. Well, speaking of outer space issues, as we are at the moment, did you know that Earth's atmosphere is disrupting GPS signals?
Earth's atmosphere is disrupting GPS signals.
I did not know that.
No. Why is Earth's atmosphere?
This could explain why a lot of people are taking the wrong exit on the freeway.
And why the Nokia N95s used to take 40 minutes to acquire.
Absolutely. Something. Well, according to scientists, they've warned that there's a perplexing electrical activity at the moment in the ionosphere caused by disruptive clouds of electrons and other electrically charged particles, which have also interfered with signals from GPS satellites.
You need to get rid of those. Electrons.
Is this what happens when they fix the plumbing in the space shuttle? We get a cloud of electrons
over
there.
They flushed.
Yes.
This is what happens.
A group of scientists or scientific reports detailing this phenomenon have been published in a special selection in a newsletter called Space Weather. One team of researchers has observed Earth's aurora, a prominent manifestation of ionospheric electrical activity in the act of disrupting GPS equipment. Other scientists have successfully tested a way to forecast GPS disturbances for marine users. That was the word disturbances, by the way. For marine users, which is likely the likely extension to land-based users.
You see, the maritime users, they have to put a lot more faith in the technology. If you've got a GPS...
What happened to the stars? Navigate romantics. Navigate by the stars with your sextant and compass.
Yes. But if you're driving along such and such a road, and you cross over another road at an intersection, and your GPS says you're actually 2.5 blocks to the west, you think, oh, my GPS isn't working properly. But if you're out on a boat in the middle of the ocean...
I remember when my GPS used to tell me I was in the middle of the ocean.
Well, yes, it did. I got in a taxi during the week.
I remember that too, JD.
And I watched the GPS on the dashboard of the taxi, and it was changing and it was moving, but it had absolutely no relation whatsoever to where we were in the world.
These taxi drivers still can't find the airport?
Maybe that's the reason. And after about half an hour, the taxi driver obviously got fed up with it as well, and he banged it a couple of times, like you bang something, you bang a computer on the side and hope that it comes good.
Percussive maintenance, we call that.
Percussive maintenance. And it didn't come good. He ended up turning it off.
So where did you end up? Did you get a long way, wherever it was you were going?
No, well, I got to where I was going. He knew where I wanted to go, which was fortunate. But I was sitting in the back seat, and I was watching the GPS, and I thought, no, this has got absolutely no relation whatsoever to where we are. I don't know what the hell it was showing.
Maybe, I don't know, there's a lot of things out there that use GPSs these days, like, public transport, to tell you which station you're coming up to and all that. That uses all that GPS technology.
Yeah.
So you wouldn't want to be on one railway line and get a station from another. That'd really throw you if you're half buried in your newspaper on the way home, wouldn't it?
Have you ever been in the City Loop? The City Loop in Melbourne is our underground rail system.
Your GPS isn't going to work there.
Mobile phones don't work there either,
except at the station.
But have you ever wondered about that? The GPS systems in the trains, but they know what station you're pulling into. But have you ever been on the train that says the next station is Huntingdale or something which is like...
different.
Yeah, it's 15 kilometres away and well and truly not in the loop.
Now, that'd be very scary. As I said, if you were nosed down in a newspaper, you'd be sitting bolt upright.
This is what happened to me. I went, what? Where we going to what now? Hang on a minute. And you have a look around. No, maybe the system's wrong. But usually it's pretty good, isn't it?
It'd be like on the here in Melbourne, we have the City Circle Tram, which is a free tram ride for all the tourists.
Mm.
And that's all GPS-based because it talks to you as you go around the city. Yes. That'd be quite interesting to actually, it'd be quite interesting to see if you came up outside of their range or something and you go, oh, that's not that place.
Yeah. Tell us if you've had experiences like this where technology hasn't worked predictably for whatever reason. Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au.
Yes, well done.
And tell us what you did to fix it, if you're able to fix it.
Did you use a technical tap? Did you throw it out the window?
Were you required to resort to percussive maintenance?
I've got a Garmin.
Did you drive down the train tracks?
Don't start him again, please. You know,
did you make the?
We've only got 10 minutes of show to go. Don't
use headlines.
Well, it's funny because a certain senior sergeant in Bright, I think, was talking about how that a lot of people who take the shortest route home is not necessarily the wisest decision to take. And I think it was about that time that Graham leapt into rhetoric over there about engage brain, do not disengage brain in when you engage your GPS like that. But
this is what I mean.
It's common, isn't it?
But if you're out in a boat, so being serious, if you're 500 metres or a kilometre off, like obviously some of the devices are at times, like when you're driving the car, if that happens in a boat and you're looking out for some like rocks to avoid or you're looking out for a marker, it's not going to be immediately obvious to you like it is in a car.
Or no, you're in a very big boat that needs a channel.
Well, exactly. It's really going to ruin...
Well, that'd be problematic, I would
have thought. It's going to ruin your whole day.
It would.
Yeah.
It would. And there's plenty of running aground. You don't need any more, do you? Especially if you're carrying lots of oil and things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
It could be bad for the environment in general.
You're listening.
Dr. Ron?
Here I am listening.
Residual powers. And I've got some residual powers.
We can't turn off CDMA.
Oh,
in terms of the volume,
overstanding your fingerprints.
Now, this
we may have digressed.
Talk radio.
Bill Burgess also claimed the country would remain behind.
We used to think 600 kilometres.
Don't open things that are good that you're not expecting, even if they do a thing.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
The Fat Shark FPV radio controlled racer. This is a radio controlled model car. But it's not just a radio controlled model
car. Oh,
really?
Oh, goodness me.
It's a radio controlled model car with a built in video camera. But it's not just a radio control model car with a built-in video camera.
Transmit somewhere, right?
The new system from Fat Shark comes with a set of wireless virtual reality goggles, which provide the display, and there's a built-in accelerometer in the goggles.
Does it work on unleaded or diesel?
To control the tilt and pan of the camera. In other words, the headset and your head movements directly control the camera pan tilt
via
an independent 433 megahertz radio link. You get a 2.4 gig CE certified 10 milliwatt transmitter, a high resolution 420 TVL camera, 5-channel radio controlled radio with integrated head tracking pan tilt camera mount and camera transmitter, and a high performance 4-wheel drive radio controlled racer. According to Engadget, you can buy the system with the car or purchase the components separately to hook onto, for example, a remote control plane. You can even remotely turn on, off headlights for nighttime driving or for dark areas that need exploring. You need to go to YouTube for a video demonstration. Search for the keywords Fat Shark Wireless. Very impressive.
How much?
No word on price. So watch this
surprised.
Space. But for more information, click on the FPV RC car link at www.gowiththeshark.com.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
We have been talking in recent weeks about social networking sites.
Oh, yes.
And I've said that you should have the ability to update all of your status messages from one source and for messages and status updates to be network independent.
Oh, and you found a place to do that, have you, social networking guru?
I found not one but two. The first one is ping.fm. Thank you to the person who recommended this in the Facebook Tech Talk Radio group. I just can't remember off the top of my head who that was, but thank you. Ping.fm lets you do this. It lets you use AIM, Gtalk, iGoogle, WAP, iPhone, iPod, Touch, SMS, and email to relay status updates.
There are people just going, what?
To Twitter, Facebook, MySpace, all sorts of things. You need an account, though, and you need a special beta code. Well, the system's still under development. I emailed them and said, can you give me a special beta code? They haven't replied yet, but if you're lucky enough to find one, no, go to ping.fm. The other one that I have used, which seems to work very well, is called HelloText, hellotxt.com. And again, this enables you to update your status across all of your social networks. It works to Twitter, Jaiku, Pounce, Facebook, MySpace, and Bebo, and it works very well. Note that it's only one way, so you won't actually get messages coming back into HelloText, but it lets you propagate your status messages to all of your social network accounts.
Well, if you've got plenty like you have, Dr. On, that's probably a damn fine thing.
There you go. So we've got two websites for this week, ping.fm and HelloText.com.
There is a fine line between genius and madness. Showtime.
Missed it by that much.
I know nothing. Nothing.
Houston, we have a problem.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
I said that this week's Odd Spot was related to our Hong Kong friends. And Hong Kong police have said that a suspected Peeping Tom scaled the outside of his apartment block with his mobile phone to film his 28-year-old neighbour taking a bath. Police said really? The 44-year-old man was...
As everyone looks at Dr. Ron's laptop?
Unfortunately,
for the pictures?
Critically injured after he fell 10 floors and only survived because his fall was cushioned by a tree. He's expected to face criminal charges if he survives. The man's Sony Ericsson Z800i was undamaged in the incident.
Hasn't this bloke heard of...
I made that last bit up. Has this bloke heard of wireless webcams? It's got to be an easier way, doesn't there?
Well, I don't know. Either that or the neighbour was obviously a real hottie or something like that when he was going. It was worth the, life and limb
He thought he was Spider-Man climbing 10 walls up to... Yeah.
Maybe he'd had some encouragement for some substances or something like that on the track. You never know.
The mind boggles. Graham, speaking of being substance affected, you've got a very important announcement to make.
That the video for the drawing of the 1 terabyte Maxtool hard drive competition is now online. Go to forum.techtalkradio.com.au and have a look in the announcement section. You'll find it there.
Woohoo! So in the time that we've actually recorded that and now, we've got it up online. It's available for everyone to see.
Yep.
That's pretty good.
Fantastic. Well, you're done. Yes, if you missed it before, we announced the winner of our 1 terabyte hard drive competition we had with Maxtor, one of the new encrypted things. So, yes, Duane. What's his... What?
Dwayne.
Dwayne, that's it. Sorry, Dwayne. I'll get it right one of these days. I'll give you a ring and you can tell me personally very shortly. But he won our 1 terabyte hard drive, which is going to be heading his way to a 08, wherever that might happen to be. I think it's Adelaide. Is that right?
Is it his phone number starts with 08?
Yeah.
Well, is it 088 or 089?
Okay.
088's in Adelaide, and 089's a Perth, I think.
All right. You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio. Dr. Ron, Graham Callaghan. Who are you? Graham Callaghan?
You should hear what he calls us off here, Dwayne, so you can't even...
No, there's a tongue engaged. It's been a long day, JD over there. Yes, thank you, one and all. We'll be back the same time next week on this radio station that you're listening to us on, and we'll do it all again. We'll probably find out what eBay's song and dance is up to this time next week, too.
And don't forget the Apple Store opening on the 19th. Ooh. Are we doing a road trip? We're heading up?
Yeah, no. Grab your microphone and go and do some VoxBox.
I'm on holidays. Come on, we'll do it.
We're on holidays.
Yeah,
this Thursday.
I'm always on holidays.
All right, back. Yeah, absolutely. Till next week. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, panellists Graham Callaghan and Mark Diggins, expert opinion Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by Graham Callaghan. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live to the world each and every Monday night at 8 p.m. from the studios of 3WBC. The crew wish to thank all the stations that take the show, including 3WBC and 3XX in Melbourne, Cairns FM, Switch 1197 in Brisbane, 95.3 Huon FM in Tasmania, Queer FM in WA, and Stop and Go Radio in the United States. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 9018 9043 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.